Welcome to the American Idiots Podcast, the show where we take the hottest topics currently dividing our country and we debate them with our diverse group of hosts. So sit back and strap in as for the next 2 hours we leave no story undebated and no politician will be spared. It's the American Idiots Podcast live on Podcast Network 49 and it begins right now. Good evening, ladies and gents. Welcome into the American Idiots Podcast. I am Money Mike, your host, along with my co-host, Mr. Manicus Manic. And we actually have a third panelist tonight that's going to be joining us at some point during the broadcast. Got some technical hiccups going on with that situation. But with that being said, of course, if you're watching us on Facebook, go ahead and throw our page a like and share it if you would. If you're watching us on YouTube, go ahead and give us a subscribe and share that as well if you would. And hit the notification bell so you're notified every time we upload. Of course, if you're listening to us on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, all those good stations, go ahead and subscribe to us. Leave us a five-star review. All that good stuff. Okay, now that that's out of the way, let me go ahead and bring on my co-host and the second member of our panel tonight, the Manic Hispanic Manny. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing good. Coming at you from the same hotel, but a different room. The AC went out in my other room.
Well, so right now ain't the time for the AC to be going out. It's 8 o'clock here, and it's 88 degrees still. I mean, it feels bad.
But they bumped me over to a different room, but, you know, y'all bear with me if it seems like I'm out of touch more than normal. I just finished an 82-hour week. I'm working Saturday and Sunday, 12-hour days.
Hey, we got your videos to cover you. You should be good to go as far as this goes. As a matter of fact, let's go ahead and get into things here as we await
our third things. Yeah, we're running late. Ladies and gentlemen, we are sorry that we started late. You know, we were waiting on a woman. Go figure.
you gonna get whooped. Okay, let's go ahead and get into our topics for the evening. President Biden this past week announced a new regulation to quote unquote catch tax cheats, but it seems like a very broad overreach of the federal government and. We'll get into that here in just a second, but we have a story from WBNS 10 TV.
All new tonight at 6, how much money do you have in your bank account? Well, depending on your answer, under proposed tax reform by President Biden, every transaction you make would be reported to the IRS. This proposed plan is raising some major privacy concerns. 10 TV's Lindsay Mills combs through the testimony to verify what's included in the plan.
Recently, I have noticed some rumors floating around that the Biden administration is trying to pass legislation to force all financial institutions to report financial transactions of $600 or more to the IRS. Is there any truth to these rumors?
Our sources are testimony from the IRS commissioner to the Senate Finance Committee, as well as President Joe Biden's spending plan for fiscal year 2022. Let's break down where this comes from. Back on April 28, 2021, the Biden administration announced the American Families Plan. In it, tax reform. Fast forward now to June 8, 2021. The IRS commissioner testifies before the Senate Finance Committee on the IRS budget, which includes details of the tax reform proposal as part of the president's spending plan for fiscal year 2022. According to that testimony, the plan aims to, quote, improve tax administration and provide the IRS with a blueprint to address various facets of the tax gap. Here's where we found the answer to Richard's question. Commission. Under the proposed legislation, financial institutions would report data on financial accounts. This requirement would apply to all business and personal accounts from financial institutions with at least $600. The measure, if approved, would begin in 2023. So we can verify, yes, under President Biden's proposed legislation, the IRS would have more information on financial accounts with more than $600. Again, it is a proposal, and as it makes its way through Congress, a lot could change. There has been some pushback to this plan. On Monday, U.S. representatives from 9 states, not including Ohio, sent a letter strongly opposing this proposal to Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the IRS commissioner, and others. We reached out to the IRS, and a spokesperson responded, "We never comment on proposed or pending legislation." Have something you'd like us to verify? Send us an email to verify@10tv.com. With your Verify, I'm Lindsay Mills.
Okay, so Manny, this one right here just screams off the page to me. So the party that accuses, and again, I'm going to go into the hypocritical of both nature of both parties. The party that accuses the right through the Patriot Act of delving into people's personal life and business way too much is delving into your personal life way too much. $600, that's less than a paycheck for me. I mean, come on now.
That's less than a paycheck for most people. That is less than some people's unemployment. And from the sound of it, it's not transactions that are $600 or more. It's if you have $600 or more in the bank. So should this pass, I guarantee you one of the first things you're going to see is a bunch of people closing their bank accounts.
Exactly. And you know, one of the things I saw proposed to this, that this may be a good idea. Somebody commented on a news story here saying that this is for, you know, the people that are cheating the tax system or the people that are like laundering money for drugs or what have you. You know, they're going to catch them for these big deposits and what have you. Here's the thing. How many drug dealers do you know that put their money in banks? How many people do you know that are laundering money or stealing money from businesses or what have you that are putting money in American banks? This is
this wording isn't trying to catch drug dealers or any of that. They're trying to catch people that are falsifying their income.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But while they're trying to do that, they're looking at everybody's income.
Exactly. So essentially what this is this takes it, and this was in place. This is currently in place, is the limit is $10,000. If you have $10,000 in your bank account, basically you're being watched right now. Fair enough. I don't know too many Americans that have 10 grand just sitting in their bank accounts right now.
Right. And that's another thing. Is it having $10,000 or is it $10,000 transactions?
It's a good point. It's a very good point. And here's the thing about it. Me, for example, the way my rent's set up, I send $615 once a month to my wife to pay the rent every month through Facebook. That's going to be a $600 deposit. Does that mean that they're going to watch that? Like, it seems... I was talking with Mel, who's going to join us here in a little bit, and it seems to me it's another broad overreach of the government, and it's Democrats doing exactly what Republicans have traditionally said that they're doing. They're being stereotypical, big brother government, and it's a mistake, in my opinion. A lot of people are going to be turned off by this, a lot of potential voters for the Biden administration. It's not that I'm trying to cheat the system by any stretch of the imagination, but what do you need to do to look into my bank just because I get $600 deposits?
See, that's another thing. I'll get into the law part of it here in just a minute. But what I was, the rabbit hole I started going down was when all of these people close their bank accounts and pull their money from these banks, what do you think is going to happen? There's going to be a lot of banks that start struggling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As far as the legal precedents on this, we have a right to not be searched under the Fourth Amendment. So them looking at our finances, is that not a form of search, illegal search?
It's a good point. I mean, once again, you're talking about a private asset that I have that, let's be honest, I don't carry a $600 balance around. I don't know, once again, just like the $10,000 balance, I don't know too many Americans right now that are carrying $600 balances in their bank every
year. And the thing they're doing is they're holding everybody as a guilty party.
Exactly.
Which is also against the law. You're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty.
Exactly. These are the same Democrats who fought against being able to look at text messages, which I completely agree with. You shouldn't be able to read all of my text messages. But these are the same Democrats who fought against that. But yet they want to look at every transaction you make. Basically, $600 isn't a lot. I would say right now, with minimum wage going up here in the state of Arkansas, $600 is attainable probably by a minimum wage job at this point, because I think minimum wage is going to 11 here in the state of Arkansas. So, I mean, you're talking about basically, number one, you're going to inundate the IRS having to look at all of these freaking bank accounts. It's just, it's going to become a mess for everything.
Yeah, so really the only hope we have right now is that this proposal gets turned down.
Yeah, that's what that's what I'm hoping for. Obviously, you see the Republicans are already coming after it. They wrote a letter to the president saying that they don't appreciate this, yada, yada, yada. Of course, that's worth the paper it's written on. Same with Biden's executive orders. But still something to keep your eye on, because I just think that's absolutely unacceptable that they want to look at just about, once again, every American's bank account that's currently employed. It's ridiculous to me.
Well, it seems like they may have painted themselves into a corner with a lot of these programs to help people. They are needing tax money now to help fund all these giveaways that they've been doing.
Stimuluses, personal PPP loans, things like that. Absolutely. And you know, another thing that I'm looking at that they could be doing is they could be looking at these people, these small businesses that they gave the PPP loan to make sure that they're actually using those funds accurately rather than, you know, spending them on themselves or what have you. Again, though,
and it's one thing to be looking at a business. It's something totally different to be looking at your personal accounts.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it did mention, you know, specifically that it's not only business accounts that they're going to be looking at. It's business and personal accounts that they're going to be looking at. Once again, a broad overreach from a government. And I'll say this, and I kind of want to say this and get your thoughts on it. This, again, proves to us that President Biden isn't this lighthouse at the end of the tunnel here. He's just more of the same as far as the status quo for these presidents that are, you know, taking away your freedoms as we speak. Whether it have been President Trump, President Biden, President Bush, President Obama, et cetera, again, it's another layer that President Biden, like, literally the cons outweigh the pros in this. What they were thinking to lower it to such a small number, $600. Again, you're talking about your paycheck on average here, at least in the state of Arkansas, where minimum wage has gone up, will be $600. So you're talking about looking at every employed Arkansas person's bank account. You're talking about teenagers here. We're not talking about people that are stealing money. You're talking about teenagers in high school. And you're wasting government resources to track this.
Right.
Not to mention, let's be honest, this is going to cause the IRS. I mean, I guess Biden could spin it that he's creating jobs, because they're going to have to hire new people to look at all these people's bank accounts that are going to start getting hit in 2023. So,
yeah.
Whew. Definitely something for the president to think twice about before possibly moving forward. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the Pfizer COVID-19 booster being denied approval this week by the FDA. I certainly have some thoughts on this, and I'm not sure which way I'm going to go, but we have a story from Good Morning America on it.
Dr. Paul Offit, a vaccine expert at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and a member of the FDA's advisory panel who was part of the booster recommendation yesterday. Dr. Offit, it's good to see you. Good morning. Great to have you. So as we noted there in that report, you and your colleagues on the FDA advisory panel voted to reject booster shots for everyone 16 and up. I'll get to what you did support in just a moment, but what was missing from the data regarding young people and boosters, and why are you unconvinced that they need them right now?
Well, I think what we were presented were data from Israel showing that there was an erosion of protection against severe disease with the mRNA vaccines. That hasn't been appreciated in the United States. I mean, there are a handful of studies that have all showed the same thing, which is two doses of mRNA vaccines are highly effective in preventing severe disease, including Delta, including all age groups. So we weren't as compelled to follow Israel's lead, and rather we wanted to test the water with one foot by putting the vaccine now into people who are older, meaning those greater than 65 or those who have high-risk medical conditions, and then learn from that. Remember that the initial phase 3 trials of the mRNA vaccines were in 30,000 people for Moderna or 44,000 people for Pfizer. The phase 3 trial for three doses was in 306 people. So I think we really do need to test the water with one foot as we move forward.
So there were some dramatic twists, so to speak, as far as these panels go. You voted unanimously, eventually, to limit the scope, as you mentioned, recommending booster shots for those 65 and older and at high risk. What was different about that group specifically? And then what's your advice for those people who could soon be eligible?
Right. No, I think, well, so again, as we said in the preliminary here, is that we're an advisory body. We give advice to the FDA. The FDA then will presumably take that advice and then there. But the FDA is a regulatory agency, not a recommending agency. Then it goes to the CDC. The CDC will be more granular, I think, in exactly how that's recommended. So by the end of this week, I think we'll learn more about exactly what the recommendations are. But I want to make one point. I mean, hopefully that to some extent this will impact the pandemic by giving a third dose to people who are at highest risk. But if we really want to get on top of this pandemic, we need to vaccinate the unvaccinated. As you saw in the graph that you just showed in terms of where the hotspots are, those are all states with relatively low vaccination rates. So that's going to be the key. I don't think people should have the notion now that with this third dose that we're going to get on top of this pandemic, because we're not until we vaccinate people who are unvaccinated.
So part of what led up to this debate here, last month the Biden administration put out this date of September 20th for when boosters would likely be available to the general public. They did say that was pending approval, but did the White House get too far ahead of themselves and the science on this?
I don't think they necessarily got ahead of the science. I think what they got ahead of was the scientific process. So what normally happens is you have a problem, for example, erosion in protection against mild or asymptomatic infection. You have a solution, which is to give a booster dose, and you generate data. Those data then go to the FDA for at least approval regarding regulating, allowing the company to distribute it, for example, as a three-dose product to certain groups, and then it goes to the CDC, who makes the recommendation. I think by sort of declaring a date of September 20th, they really did marginalize the FDA and CDC in that process initially, but eventually it worked out.
Dr. Offit, thank you again for your time this morning. We do appreciate it.
So you saw there the gentleman who sits on the board there explaining their decision. They obviously recommended it for 65 years of age or older. They recommended it for those that are at high risk, these Pfizer COVID-19 booster shots. However, this is the first time that I've heard Pfizer kind of doing some shady stuff. If I heard correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, if I heard the gentleman correctly, he said that instead of thousands of people that were in the initial test run for the initial doses, this was limited to, I believe, 360-something, he said. Right. And those weren't Americans. Those were actually people over in Israel. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, those are our guinea pigs. To find out if this is something we need to do or not.
So that actually strikes me as something that's a little bit suspect. that Pfizer's actually doing here. It sounds like Pfizer kind of got the go-ahead from the Biden administration. Hey, you guys are going to get the approval. Just go get some numbers and we'll make sure it approves. And unfortunately, it backfired for them this time. I mean, that's the impression I'm getting. It doesn't sound like Pfizer took this process for the booster as seriously as they did for the initial two shots.
Right, but I mean, if you look at pharmaceutical and the way they've always tested stuff, there's always been, you know, shady stuff going on. I mean, you look at stuff like Prilosec, you know, known to cause cancer, yet FDA said, yeah, we're still good. CDC.
Right. And you know, here's the thing. Once again, we're going to find out however many years, 20, 30, 40 years down the line, if there are any effects that are long lasting of these vaccines. But once again, this isn't a good look. It seems like it's two steps forward and then three giant leaps back for these vaccinations. I mean, if you're looking at this and you get the conclusion that I got, that Pfizer was being kind of shady in their practices to get this booster approved, are you going to trust the Pfizer vaccine, which is the only vaccine currently with FDA approval right now?
Right.
I mean, it's not...
You already know my view on that, Michael. I'm not going to go get a vaccine that is really unneeded, in my opinion. The numbers have told me that you're more likely to recover from it than die from it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the thing with this. You know, he even mentioned, though, that he's questioning whether these boosters are actually necessary. He's saying that, you know, these initial shots are showing good data against the different variants as well. He's saying right now the only benefit he sees to booster shots is getting the people that would have asymptomatic COVID, getting them to where they won't catch COVID at all is what it came off the ear.
Right. And that's another thing he's pushing, like everybody else, that the problem is the people that are unvaccinated.
Right. And you know, again, he talks about the initial vaccine is doing what me and you expect it to do. It's lessening the symptoms or making you asymptomatic if you catch it. But he's saying that this will prevent you from catching it at all, if I understood correctly. The booster, the only benefit he sees is not that you will be asymptomatic, but that you won't catch it, period.
Right.
We were sold this bill of goods 6 months ago when this vaccine first rolled out heavily, that this vaccine was going to inhibit your ability to catch COVID, not that it was going to inhibit the symptoms.
Right.
So again, are we being sold a bill of goods, or are we being told the truth this time that this is actually going to prevent you from catching the coronavirus?
Right. And along with that was, once you're vaccinated, you won't have to wear the mask anymore. And then that changed. They still want you to social distance. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, not a lot has changed from the government side of it.
What do you make of them actually, though, going ahead and recommending the 65 years of or older or the immune compromised Americans to go ahead and get that booster? What do you make of that? Do you think that's just a situation where maybe Pfizer took too big of a bite out of the apple for wanting just already to get that 11 to, you know, 60 whatever year old people, whereas they did it in smaller bites for the initial rollout? Or do you think that they're just forcing this situation upon them with the 65 and immune compromised people, and they're going to kind of test those Americans to see their effects and if they actually build up that immunity to coronavirus.
I think they're trying to see if they can get these people to build up an immunity to it.
Okay. Now, see, the reason why that strikes me as odd is because you're 65 years or older, or you have an immune condition that prevents you, you know, that would make COVID more serious. Why would you want to use that group as your test case scenario when you could use somebody like the 20 to 30 demographic, I would say, who, you know, if they catch COVID, they have a pretty good chance of surviving. So why not use that group rather than risk somebody that's older thinking that they're completely immune to COVID, catching COVID, possibly dying?
Because if the putty makes the chain stronger at the weakest link, then you know it's good for the strong links.
Okay. Okay, good point. I can see your point there as well. So definitely, again, something to keep your eye on as we move forward is the potential for this booster and the fight that we are going to have. And we actually have our third panelist joining us now, Ms. Meldonna. Meldonna, how are you doing today? You're on mute, if that helps. Technology may not be the best case scenario here. She may not be ready. So let's go ahead and move on.
Now, but before we move on, would like to inquire about some of these large states that have NFL teams. I mean, here we are, 2 weeks into the season?
You know, and we've discussed that. It's going to be interesting to see if they have a study specifically for these larger markets with the bigger teams, or even, honestly, once again, we've talked about this on the air last week, the Arkansas Razorbacks right here in Arkansas, one of the smaller states in the union, not requiring proof of vaccination, not requiring a mask. We're seeing not necessarily an uptick in cases. Of course, it's only been 3 weeks. We may see it coming in this current week that we're in. But certainly something also to keep your eye on is you would think traditional data is showing us that these should be going up and up and up right now here in Arkansas.
Right,
right now, they're
right. That's why I was pointing that out. You know, do we have any data on any of these places yet?
Well, the
Because we should already know whether we have an uptick in new cases.
Well, and the reason why I say maybe we'll find out this week, I know there's that 2 week incubation period. So it'll be interesting this week. If we don't see a rise, it'll be interesting to see what they say going forward as far as statistics with that. Because once again, you would think that, you know, the university would either change policy or what have you to move forward with this. The interesting thing here for me on this, though, is we have been steady, but we're still over 1,000 new cases per day. So, I mean, we're not exactly the bright beacon at the end of the tunnel for COVID by any stretch of the imagination. And Mel may be having some tech issues. But we're not exactly the bright beacon as far as, you know, we're not standing out as the example of how to handle COVID by any stretch of the imagination, like Asa Hutchinson wanted to be this time last year.
And that may be, but I still am seeing a lack of mass funerals. So,
you know, you're right. Once again, I think we're still, actually, you told me to look again this week. So COVID numbers. You just want the Arkansas numbers, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Right now we have 484,000 active cases, 7,435 deaths. This is since the beginning. Over the past week, let me look here. Over the past week, we've averaged, is this deaths? Oh, this is Pulaski County. Never mind, I apologize. Over the last week, we've averaged roughly 2,000 new cases a day, with our lowest being 787, our lowest day being 787. On deaths this week, we have gone, actually, we've gone up. It looks like we are on an upward trend for deaths. What was a week ago? So a week ago would have been the 13th.
Yep.
So 31, 28, 33, 23, 17. We're roughly staying in the low 20s to low 30s. So we're in that 10 range of between like 21 and 31 per day.
All right.
So we're averaging 2,000 new cases and about, we'll say 25 just to average it out, deaths per day. Deaths aren't going up. COVID numbers, man, looks like they may be a slightly increasing. But, I mean, if I were to have my guess on what it should look like, we should be well over probably close to 2,500 to 3,000 new cases per day based upon 70,000 some odd people in Razorback Stadium alone every Saturday. You would think.
Right.
Okay. So
this is as of September 20th.
That is as of September 20th, today.
All right.
Okay. Let's go ahead and move on. This week, we're going to talk about this case. Next week, we're actually going to have this young man's boss on the air to talk about the case. But a Lone Oak County family is searching for answers after a sheriff's deputy killed him. This has been a couple months ago. The gentleman's name, Hunter Bertain, was killed by a Lone Oak County sheriff's deputy. And this week, the sheriff's deputy was charged with manslaughter. We're going to discuss what we think about the charge, how it's looking, and if this speaks to the broader issue. We've been talking about this whole time about police brutality, and we have a story here from Fox 16 KLRT.
Our coverage continues with our Hunter Hoagland, who is back from the Polk County Courthouse. And Hunter, you talked with friends and family. What did they tell you?
Well, Donna, this has been a long time coming. Nearly 3 months after the teen's death, his family finally getting some answers. While they tell me the charges are a start, there's still a long way to go.
Justin Brunner!
It's a chant we've heard before. A chant that has echoed in counties across the state for the last 3 months.
No justice, no peace!
Waiting on an answer whether or not fired Lone Oak County Deputy Michael Davis would be charged in the shooting death of Hunter Britton.
What I'm going to do now is read to you the affidavit that was presented to a judge this morning with an arrest warrant for Michael Davis.
A unanimous sigh of relief on the first floor of the Polk County Courthouse Friday morning.
He will be charged with manslaughter.
We finally got some answers.
Cheers erupting inside as the phrase "justice for Hunter" begins to take motion.
It's been a long, long, hard road.
Hunter's uncle Jesse Britton says while the manslaughter charge isn't enough, it is a start.
We're thankful that he was charged and he won't be able to get out and mistakenly kill any more kids.
I think it was murder. I mean, I really think he murdered him.
Other family members hoping the teen's death will spark police reform nationwide, pushing for legislation called Hunter's Law, which aims for heightened body camera enforcement on the force.
This would have been a lot different if he had had that body cam on.
Friends and family say they'll continue chanting these words until the charge becomes a conviction. Again, Michael Davis turned himself in following the announcement earlier this morning. He's expected to be in court Monday morning for a bond hearing. Our team will be there and bring you the very latest here on Fox 16. Kevin and Donna, back to you.
Okay, so in an update to that story, he was released on, I believe, $50,000 bond this morning. But I want to kind of get your ideas on this, Manny. Of course, they did get the manslaughter charge. Here's the thing that kind of So again, the thing I stress with this is obviously you don't want to overcharge. So let's talk about the charge. The only thing we know is Hunter was killed by this officer, and the officer's body cam was not on. We don't have any video of what the incident was. We don't have any video of anything. Do you believe that manslaughter was the right charge for this particular incident?
It's hard to say without having any of the information. What has the officer claimed? What is his claim to having pulled the trigger?
I don't think the officer's actually spoken out much, or if he has, we haven't gotten his side of the story, so to speak. What we do know is he did not deploy his body cam until afterwards, which obviously is an issue. That he didn't have his body cam on the second he got out of the vehicle. So,
and that's one of the things I hate about these body cams is you see a lot of officers that are able and willing to mute the microphone or turn it off to keep certain things from getting out. That's one of the things they need to do away with on these body cameras is a way to turn them off.
Right, I completely agree. This thing should be running and should have enough battery power, so to speak, to last a whole 8 to 12 hour shift, depending on how long they're working. Mel Donna joining us again. Mel, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Okay, you're loud and clear. We're sitting here talking about Hunter in Lono County being and the sheriff's deputy being charged with manslaughter. I was talking with Manny, telling him that I actually believe that in this case alone, because we do not have the body cam footage, which is completely the sheriff's deputy's fault, unfortunately, I do think it would be hard to get a murder charge in this case, or at least have it.
Well, manslaughter is a murder charge. It's just a low-level one.
Okay.
And there needs to be some sort of consequences for not having the camera on in the first place.
Absolutely. That's what Manny was saying earlier is we need to get these cops body cams that they can't alter. Like the fact that you can mute, turn it off. Do what?
I said that kind of defeats the purpose, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. I mean, does this though speak? Go ahead, man.
It's supposed to be an accountability tool. And once they can do away with the accountability, what is the point of having it? Most of them are activated once like sirens are activated. It's always monitoring so that it actually starts recording seconds before sirens and stuff are activated. Mm-hmm. So, The technology is there.
We can put a man on the moon.
Right.
This is not the
technology is already in place for the battery to last for the entire shift that these officers are working.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm not going to say that this officer is not guilty because I believe just based upon the fact he didn't turn the body camera on until after. It definitely makes it look really rough for him. Obviously, I know you asked me what his side of the situation is. I tell you, though, I think, again, this speaks to not only more reform needed as far as the body cam, but again, more reform needed as far as the police department. The fact that a gun was used on a 17-year-old kid in the middle of the night in Lono County baffles me.
Right.
Well, I'm not in a hurry to, you know, this is where I feel about entire issue, the big picture. We entrust officers of the law to serve and protect, and we arm them with firearms and supposedly train them how to use them.
Right.
To me, to me, that puts more responsibility on them. But in our society, we have qualified immunity. That doesn't make sense to me.
Absolutely. You've spoken to that, Manny.
Well, the biggest problem with what you're saying is when we talk about training them, you're talking about a 6-week course.
Yeah.
Right. That's ridiculous, too. I understand in Germany, you have to have a bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. And then you have to go through, I don't know how long, of police training itself, part of which entails a couple of years with an experienced officer where you're not allowed to carry a firearm. And we might need to go to something like that here because, we've got to do something. We can't continually, be turning on our TVs and seeing the police have blown somebody else away.
Very true.
It's just electrical and electrical and plumbing are both the same way. It is a 4-year apprenticeship program.
Right.
You cannot make somebody's shit flow out of their house without being in school for 4 years.
Right. But you can
get you a gun and a taser after 6 weeks and, hey, go get them.
Apparently, if you live in Minnesota, you don't know the difference.
That does seem a bit ridiculous when you just think it through. I don't know. I come in late on the conversations because I'm on my cell phone instead of even bothering with the commuter because it's gotten so crazy. And that's not that stable either. So y'all bear with me tonight.
Yeah, I'm always on my cell phone. I never use a computer because it lags so bad.
Yeah, you're coming in loud and clear. Everything is working. So let's go ahead.
Except the camera. I don't see you.
That's on purpose. And this stupid phone I bought won't even run Candy Crush, much less upload a photo. My technology here is at the same state as the training for the police in this country, okay? we are looking at big fails in the future, okay? But anyhow, right. As long as it'll let me.
Okay, right on. So we're going to go ahead and move on to the U.S. is beginning to deport massive numbers of Haitians out of the country. We have a story from Good Morning America on this.
This morning, a 24/7 mission on the Texas border. A group of migrants, most from Haiti, spilling onto the shoreline beneath a border bridge. Thousands of men, women, and children waiting days in triple-digit heat for their chance to claim asylum. Late Saturday, Border Patrol, National Guard, and Texas State Troopers descending on the scene to try and slow down the surge.
We need the administration to call this what it is. This is a crisis.
The Department of Homeland Security sending 400 additional Border Patrol agents and resuming deportation flights to Haiti within the next 48 hours, adding our borders are not open and people should not make the dangerous journey. Yet so many already have. DHS saying till recently, thousands lived in South America. This Haitian man sharing he paid 5,000 pesos for help reaching the Texas border. Across the river, the city of Del Rio already struggling. The bridge closure cutting off millions in cross-border business.
We're just a little town. We're not equipped to humanitarily take care of these people.
Authorities say some migrants will be taken to U.S. processing centers, ones where staff aren't already overwhelmed. Others flown back to Haiti, where the island nation is still reeling from a 7.2 magnitude earthquake barely a month ago. Until then, a real-time test for U.S. authorities after the White House dismantled policies from the Trump administration that required asylum seekers to remain in Mexico while waiting for their day in court.
Every Border Patrol agent I talked to said this is at a tipping point for our security, our capacity.
And this morning, the mayor of Del Rio tells me that complicating this issue is the fact that Ciudad Acuña, the city just across this bridge in Mexico, has not been as cooperative as they would have liked in slowing down the flow of those buses carrying migrants. The message from authorities on this side of the river today, the border is closed. Don't make that journey north. Willie.
Morgan Chesky in Del Rio, Texas for us. Morgan, thanks so much.
So we have that story from Good Morning America, and it actually spoke to something that I'm very that I wonder why we haven't, excuse me, I wonder why we haven't talked about. One of the biggest solutions, I think, to this issue of immigration that we need to address is the fact of, is these people that are charging thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars to smuggle these people into the country. Those are the people I believe we need to worry about first, because number one, if you shut down their operation, obviously they have nobody to pay thousands upon thousands upon thousands of pesos or whatever to. But number two, you slow down the chain a little bit. Then you start looking on case-by-case basis upon whether, you know, you look at a pathway to citizenship or what have you. But I think the biggest issue that this specific crisis speaks to right now is we need to stop these people that are charging all of this, basically robbing these people blind to get into this country.
How do you regulate that? There's your problem. There's no way to regulate it.
I mean, it's a crime
happening in another country.
True. But if you catch them coming across the border with these mass, you know, smuggling, you could charge them with whatever crime, you know, need be. But you can at least stop these. Number one, because these people are being taken advantage of.
Oh, absolutely. But we've got a bigger problem. We've got to quit calling refugees illegal migrants, because that is an incorrect definition. This country has always prided itself on welcoming the, you know, huddled masses. If you go check out the Statue of Liberty, we felt like it was important enough to put up, you know, a 300-foot tall lady to proclaim it.
True.
And so now I understand they need to be, that folks coming into the country in any situation need to be vetted. But our federal law says they can come across the border at any point, any way they can, because they are a refugee running for their life, and turn themselves in to the nearest magistrate in order to start the legal process.
Right.
And so, that's the issue right there, is that these people are just crossing the border and not turning themselves in. They're not crossing the ports of entry.
I do believe there's plenty of Border Patrol right down there by that bridge. The media sure found them.
Yeah, but if you look at the number coming in compared to the number of Border Patrol that's there, there's no way that they can get them all. So that's why I do look at it as illegal immigrants.
That's a problem on our end, because our immigration program altogether is whack. It is seriously out of date. It's not anywhere in this century, and it's needed reform. And that's another one that everybody's been kicking down the road. Administration after administration, doesn't matter who's in. Reagan was the last one that did anything about it. And did you know what he did? He gave amnesty to all the illegal immigrants that were in the country.
Really? I did not know that. Manny, did you know that?
I did not.
I'll look it up and bring it back, because I'm just talking off of the top of my head right here.
Right.
But I'll look it up and bring it back next week. But the reason Reagan did that is because he wanted a lot of cheap labor to break the back of the unions.
I mean, touche. I mean, whatever way it happens.
The U.S. has a long history of using specifically migrant labor from across the southern border when we need them. But then when it becomes inconvenient, we throw them away. And that's why I'm saying our entire scope of immigration needs to be looked at and overhauled. We've got so much work we need to do in this country. We've got a Congress determined to continue to do nothing.
Unfortunately,
because all they see is votes.
No, all they see here comes the occupier. No, all they see is donors and cash dollar bills.
That's true too.
Our politicians are the shills that are owned by the corporations and wealthy donors. Okay. And you got to dance with the ones that brung you to the dance is the way our system has been for far too long. And it's completely out of hand now since Citizens United.
Well, and I'll give you a complete look into what we've done so far on this show. Just, you know, since we started it with Manny, we've pretty much been saying that DC as a whole needs to be ejected out of that damn city anyway. But
if you go in and kill it with fire, you kill the few there that are actually doing us some good. Do you think we're getting stimulus fairly regularly without Bernie Sanders in the Congress? Who do you think's pushing that? He's on the budget committee.
True.
Yes, but everybody doesn't need a stimulus on a regular basis.
That's true too. That is something.
That's an idea that ought to be explored a little bit more, because there is a concept known as universal basic income, which means enough money to keep you off the streets. Mm-hmm. We also need to provide more decent housing that people can actually afford without having to pack 2-3 families into an apartment, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many tangents we can go off on. So y'all better yank me back to what we were talking about. I believe it was the people running away from the earthquake underneath the bridge.
Well, and this is what we were, you know, you mentioned that we need a complete overhaul. This is exactly why I think the 21st century solution to this issue is a pathway to citizenship. You're not going to stop the flow. If you build a wall, they're going to find a way in.
You can ask anybody down in South Texas that's been around for a couple of decades, and they'll go, if you build a taller wall, they just get a longer ladder.
Exactly. I think that that's why we need to look at what we have currently in the country. We need to offer a pathway to citizenship and then potentially look at maybe staunching the flow of increasing immigration. But I think right now, number one, I think Joe Biden did the wrong thing by saying, hey, come on in, let's do this damn thing, because that's increased the numbers that are in these camps currently, which has reached a problem more so than Trump, where these people are living in terrible conditions.
I don't know if you've ever been to South Texas. People that are willing to do that to get in, just to try to get into a country, must have come from really tough circumstances at home. This ain't no pleasure cruise we're on here. This is desperate people, and I'm not sure just loading them all on a plane and funnel them back into a disaster area of its own. I mean, Haiti's had a political assassination. They've been hit by a couple of hurricanes, and they have an earthquake and then more hurricanes. You know, I'm not blaming these people for wanting to get somewhere.
Well, and I'm not saying we need to send them back currently. Once again, I'm saying pathway to citizenship for everybody that's here currently. Then we address the issue. The other major point to my immigration policy, though, is remove any monetary anything in that procedure.
Oh yeah, people do not understand. It costs thousands of dollars to get through the immigration process.
Absolutely,
it's not you walk up and say, "No, I know who the first president is. Can I get be a U.S. citizen?" No, you've got to have a lawyer, and then there's fees, and you reapply for it. It's a nightmarish system to go to, I would imagine.
I think if you're willing to study and take a test on our history, you've shown that you have enough desire to be in this country, and it means enough to you that you took your time to study and get a passing grade on this exam, go ahead. Cool.
We're looking at two different things right now.
I might actually be a little bit more conservative than Michael on this one. Because what you're talking about is real close to the open borders that frighten the hell out of everybody. And we do have a problem with people that want to come to this country to cause harm. Mm-hmm. We know that. We've seen it in, you know, large glaring color on September 11th.
Right.
But I am all for welcoming people. And like I said, the people that we have across the border, crossing the border, those are refugees. Our immigration problem, what are they quoting now? 3 million people in the country illegal or something like that. A good 90% of that is people that came in legally on a green card to work and just simply stayed here.
Right. Manny, I believe you were saying something. What were you saying?
That's pretty much what I was saying. We're talking about two different things right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a pathway to citizenship, but the Haitians that are coming over aren't necessarily looking for citizenship. They're looking for a place to stay because their place is in ruins right now.
Absolutely.
It is a humanitarian thing, not just people trying to get across the border.
It's a refugee situation.
Well, and see, with this, though, I ask you this. We talk about not being the world's police. We talk about not sticking our nose in other people's business. Where do you set the mark at that those people need to, if they don't want to become citizens, they do need to go ahead and go back home?
Or get a green card and work.
Exactly. I would say that. Absolutely. Well,
McDonald's would be happy to have some employees right now. They're crying. Arby's not even open past 8 o'clock tonight. Because they can't get enough people to run the darn thing.
That's true.
They'd be stealing Americans' jobs because we've had 600,000 people snuffed out by a plague and employers can't figure out why nobody's going for the low-hanging fruit. It's because there's all of a sudden the people that were working at McDonald's with a doctorate can actually get a job in their field.
True. Manny, what do you think about that? Setting something where, hey, either you can get a green card and continuing to be here, or you do have to, we need you to go ahead and get out.
But that doesn't change where they're coming from. I mean, mm-hmm. Haiti is in ruins.
Right, I agree. But what I'm saying is set a guideline. Okay, Haiti's 90% back to where they were. Y'all need to go ahead and either fish your cut bait.
What are they supposed to do in the meantime? Because we know they're not 90% back to where they were.
That's a good point.
Do they even have power over there yet?
Well, there's going to have to be some sort of organization. You can't just stick somebody on a plane and ship them back. You got to get their name and, you know, and find out if they've got the rest of the family here. You're going to get your ass in a lot of trouble over that. Pardon my friend. We don't want any more family separations. We don't want, and we don't want to see people happen to, you know, stay under a bridge in 100-degree weather in South Texas for weeks on end with nothing going on except I bet you anything there's a problem with even being able to get any food and water if you have money, because you want to. If they're not gouging them on this side of the border, I promise you it's happening on the southern side.
Absolutely. And we talked about that.
I mean, that's the biggest problem that I'm seeing. You know, do they have food? Do they have water? Do they have power over there yet? To my knowledge.
They got the Rio Grande. And I imagine if you were desperate, you'd go fill your water bottles up there.
No, I'm talking about in Haiti.
He's talking about in Haiti. What conditions are like there currently?
Oh, I haven't hunted up lately, but I'm sure they're horrendous. Haiti is a very extremely poor country to start with, and they still haven't recovered from the earthquake back when it was 2014, I believe. I might be wrong.
Yeah. They're still having problems with that. When Hillary Clinton pocketed all that money that was supposed to go for their...
I'm
afraid I have to share with you that is a drop in the bucket of the problem that's going on in Haiti.
I mean, I
know everybody likes to slam on Hillary, but it's a distraction from what's actually going on.
I would agree. Because, once again, though, I would say, is it as a human being, I would say it is our job to help out and clean up for them. But on the other end, I'm like, is it our job to help out and clean up for them? Especially if we're sitting here taking this agenda that people's business are their business now. We just left a country that we said, okay, if you're going to fall, you're going to fall on your own. This is your battle to fight.
The two are not the same at all. But you know, I've said before, we shouldn't have been in Afghanistan in the first place, and certainly right. not for years on end.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we kind of kicked the ball under the table when we had Bin Laden in our sights and said, "Oh, I'm not really worried about him." I mean, right. and that's a direct quote from Shrub.
Yeah, well, Shrub. Again, I think we've talked about this before, but I think Shrub was a simple, simple individual.
Well,
very simple-minded.
A simple, simple individual that's deeply involved in the oil industry makes me a little bit suspicious about why we went there, or Iraq.
Iraq, the argument can definitely be made. Okay, guys, let's go ahead and switch subjects here.
Okay.
The Pentagon this past week admitted that the Kabul drone strike that killed a multitude of civilians was a, quote, tragic mistake. And we have a story here on that from CBS Evening News.
Well, tonight we're following several developments related to Afghanistan. In Omaha, mourners remembered Marine Corporal Dagan Page, one of 13 U.S. service members killed by a suicide bomber during the evacuation of Kabul. Days after that attack, the Pentagon said that it prevented another one when a U.S. drone destroyed a car believed to be packed with explosives. Well, today a top general admitted that wasn't the case. Here's CBS's David Martin.
One of the U.S. military's final acts in Afghanistan, a drone strike on a suspected car bomb, turns out to have been a horrific blunder.
As many as 10 civilians, including up to 7 children, were tragically killed in that strike.
General Frank McKenzie, overall commander of the evacuation from Kabul, admitted the mistake. It was made in the days after a suicide bomber had killed 13 American service members and amid intelligence warnings the terrorist group known as ISIS-K was preparing to attack again.
We now assess that it is unlikely that the vehicle and those who died were associated with ISIS-K or were a direct threat to U.S. forces.
The vehicle, a white Toyota, seen here in security camera video, belonged to an aid organization and was driven by one of their employees, Zamurai Ahmadi. 6 drones followed the car for 8 hours as it drove around Kabul. At one stop, men were seen loading what was thought to be explosives into the trunk. The vehicle finally pulled into a compound 3 miles from the airport.
We were very concerned that the vehicle could move quickly and beat the airport boundary in a matter of moments.
The drone fired, setting off an explosion which at the time was taken as proof of the presence of explosives, but now appears to have been a nearby propane tank. The security camera footage shows the car was actually loaded with water containers. Zamurai was taking them home to his family because they were without running water.
McKenzie said the team that conducted the strike honestly believed they were heading off an attack, but there will now be an investigation to determine if anyone should be disciplined. Nora?
David Martin from the Pentagon, thank you.
Extradite him, let him face charges.
Thank you.
We're going to have a lot of work on that because we have been droning the wrong people for a long time.
You cannot make a mistake on that level. You can't.
It happens all the time.
They were following them for 8 hours. They had 6 different vantage points with these different drones. They even had the video of them loading the water bottles. Who wasn't watching their screen?
Which they thought were explosives? Are you kidding me? Oh, my.
Yeah, but what if they had been?
Or we could play what ifs all fucking day.
What we have is a problem with if you can't be there on the ground. This is one of the reasons I don't like drones. If you can't be there on the ground doing active intel, why are you shooting it up?
Absolutely agreed. And here's the thing. Honestly, why are we still striking in Afghanistan? I'm sorry, but we left there, what, almost a month ago?
Well, if that had been explosives and we hadn't hit them, and then they went and blew up a plane leaving, can you imagine the brouhaha over that? Here's something about Afghanistan. Everybody all the way back to Alexander the Great found out the hard way. You can't win in Afghanistan. And when you go meddling around with it, you're going to get burnt. It bankrupted the Soviet Union, for Christ's sake.
Right.
And did we learn anything from them?
You're not wrong there. Here's my thing. You're not actively trying to get rid of the Taliban. Why? I don't understand, number one, why we have drones flying over there. That seems like you're trying to poke the Taliban to want another war.
So do we still have people at the airport?
I'm sorry. I don't mean to stomp on you, Manny.
Why are we so worried about the airport? Do we still have people there at the airport?
Yes. We have Americans that are still in Afghanistan. I think the last count I heard was about 100 that didn't make it to the airport before the deadline. And there are still flights coming out. The Taliban at first was actually cooperating with this because they don't want that mess on their hands. And that's why a lot of people got to leave, is because, well, if we can get them out of the country, we don't have to deal with them stirring up shit here.
True. I mean, I thought we ceded the airport back to the Taliban, though, already. I thought,
so
like,
but yeah, they're still. But what I'm saying is that there is, as far as I know, they were still allowing flights out.
So my question on this whole thing is, how long have we been out of there?
I mean, I guess we're not.
It was
U.S. troops. When did that last troop leave?
I think the 29th of August, I believe.
I believe it was at the end of August.
Okay, end of August. We still have 100 people over there since then?
That's my understanding. And
what is taking so long for them to get their ass on a plane?
The place is in chaos. And you got Taliban running around, you know. I'm sure they're still celebrating.
Are they prisoners now?
No. My understanding is that is not the situation. It has not been safe for anybody to move through the streets of Afghanistan for, you know, a month and a half now.
Right.
So are they just chilling out at the airport? I mean,
they can't make it. What I'm saying is they can't make it to the airport.
Okay, here's my thing. Instead of drone strikes, why don't we fly a fucking C-17 in there, fucking go in there, and fucking, God bless it, get our 100 people and get the fuck out and be done with it.
Well, that's a good way to give the Taliban a C-130.
Well, my whole issue with this is the way they were saying this car was within 3 miles of the airport, and they were scared that it could strike the airport. If these people aren't even at the airport, what is the issue? It sounds like a general that's trying to cover some ass.
I don't know how in touch they are with who's en route to the airport and what have you.
Mm-hmm. I can see what Manny's saying, too, though. It once again, at best, it's us trying to protect the Afghan citizens who we've already said it's your shit to deal with. Why are we still protecting the Afghan citizens? At best.
Well, the thing about getting to the airport is if you get to the airport and you can't get into the airport, well, there you are. That's how all those people got killed with the suicide bomber.
I mean,
they were targeting refugees.
I hate to advocate boots on the ground, but this can be taken care of in one afternoon with one plane.
It's a question of, do you want to leave Afghanistan or not? We moved how many people in a matter of 3 weeks, and we've still got 100 we're concerned about? we do the best we can with the situation we've got to get them out. But the other question is how come they didn't leave 6-8 months ago or whenever it was, when they were advised that it was dangerous to stay in Afghanistan and Trump had said flag in the ground and when we were going to leave.
Exactly. I would agree with that statement, too. I mean, once again, Lord, don't strike me down, but I hate to admit it, but at this point, are you not looking at these 100 people like, sorry, it's your own damn fault?
I'm not sending troops over back into the mess we just got out of. It's just, like I said, we can do the best we can do, and that's what we can do.
Right. I just, again, the intelligence on this. Number one, if you're President Biden, you're looking for blood at the Pentagon on this, because this is another issue he's going to have to deal with. Questioning, number one, his foreign policy, questioning his Afghan withdrawal, all of that. This is a headache you didn't need. And now you have it. You're looking for blood if you're President Biden, in my opinion, over there at the Pentagon. Somebody's getting the ass fired.
Well, yeah, there needs to be a discharge, and they need to go ahead and extradite them to that country so that they can serve.
Yeah.
And yet again, we find another issue that the drone strikes of a system, a policy system that needs to be looked into and overhauled, because we've been quietly doing drone strikes ever since the technology was available.
Right.
And I believe that would have been early in the Obama administration. Once again, I'm spitballing here, but there were several instances that actually made news of people being, they were tracing terrorists through cell phones, and they'd get a hot cell phone contact and drone it. Well, the cell phone had been given to the granddaughter who went with the rest of the family to the wedding, and the terrorist was on the other side of the country. This is a problem. We can't just be, you know, sitting out here taking pot shots at whatever we think might be a terrorist. The only thing that does is create more terrorists.
I'll be honest, I'm not happy with Afghanistan at all, but you're talking about, you just blew up a gentleman who loaded up water for his family because he doesn't have running water in his...
Well, the occasion I'm talking about, they blew up an entire wedding. And they weren't doing anything but, you know, trying to celebrate life. It's a problem that's long going. It's not just this latest incident that we know about. So,
I mean, and again, the words seem hollow, a tragic mistake.
Well, what's he going to say?
I mean, I'm sorry. I know we just got rid of Trump because he spoke his mind too damn much, but hell, he's a military man. Get on TV and be like, hey, I'm sorry, I fucked up.
I was going to say, it's about time to throw out the FCC guidelines on what you can broadcast on TV and go, look, we fucked up. But other than that, what was he going to say? Nothing he was going to say was going to be good, accepted, or anybody happy about, because none of us are happy that they droned a guy over water bottles.
I mean, I'll be honest, if you would have caught some damn Taliban motherfuckers in there, I'd been like, hell yeah, let's do this shit.
I'd have been happy to catch a few ISIL-K, which was supposedly what they were aiming for.
Right, but you're talking about you killed kids, you killed a man trying to take water to his family. Like, these are mistakes. Like Manny said, at this point, the word needs to be, if you cannot verify on the ground, you don't do this.
I agree. Man, you have to jump in because me and Mike are loudmouths.
We are.
I've already said my piece on it, so I'm letting y'all go.
All right, Dad. I'm the newcomer. I don't want to be stomping on you.
Let's go ahead and move on to this Korean arms race that we're running into. once again, it seems like you kill off one issue, a new one arises. We have this story from the BBC News on missile tests.
Hello and welcome. It's being described by some observers as a mini arms race. In the space of a few days, both North and South Korea have conducted a series of missile tests. Just 48 hours after testing a cruise missile, North Korea fired two ballistic devices into the direction of Japan, something the Prime Minister has described as outrageous. A short time later, South Korea conducted its own test, a planned launch of a ballistic missile from a submarine. Our correspondent Laura Bicker has more details for us from Seoul.
Well, within just a few hours on this one Korean peninsula, we have two Koreas making two separate launches. First of all, that launch by North Korea, we understand it was a short-range ballistic missile. They flew around 800 kilometers towards the Sea of Japan, also known as the East Sea here. These are ballistic weapons, so they are banned under UN Security Council resolutions. So there will be international condemnation, as opposed to South Korea's launch, which came from a submarine. Now, interestingly, this is a missile that is capable of taking a nuclear weapon, but South Korea does not have nuclear weapons. This is a first for South Korea, and it will become one of only seven nations able to fire a missile from a submarine. It comes as South Korea has increased its budget for defense in recent years. And they do say here in Seoul that it's to counter what's happening in the north. But it also has an added meaning, because here on the peninsula in South Korea, 28,000 US troops are based. And South Korea more or less relies on the United States for defense. And it's called the nuclear umbrella because the US covers this entire region as an ally and is there in terms of defense. But South Korea has shown increasing steps that it wants to stand on its own 2 feet. With this budget increase of 7%, it's just decided to build an aircraft carrier. It's just bought a whole bunch of jets. So it got brand new military hardware. And here, I think what we have, I think even though this is a planned launch, having those two missile launches on the same day within a few hours of one another just shows exactly what a mini arms race is going on this Korean peninsula right now.
Okay, here's where the Republican comes out on me. Are we allowed to blow this midget motherfucker off the face of the earth yet? I'm not even talking about boots on the ground. All it's going to take is one strategically placed bomb and it's over. Like, come on now. Can we just end this issue that's been a headache for the past 20 years now? I'll start with you, Manny.
It's a civil war. I mean, the North is trying to exert force. The South is trying to show that they're not going to be pushed around. At least they're taking the reins and trying to flex themselves instead of just waiting for the U.S. to flex for them.
One thing I will say that I absolutely kind of gave me a little bit of heartening there was she did say that South Korea is trying to stand on its own 2 feet. Big brother doesn't have to come take up for little brother. Here's the thing. Right. They're playing with fire because Japan's pissed off at this missile. The UN is obviously pissed off at this missile.
Right.
They're playing with some fire that they don't really want to mess with. I mean, I know we're going to kind of slow play this because of the nuclear issues that are present. But I mean, here's the thing. You can sanction this motherfucker. He doesn't care. It's not going to hurt
him. Yeah. He don't care about sanctions. He doesn't care that it's against the codes. None of that matters to them.
Literally the thing he is doing, and I guess we don't see him as a threat because obviously these motherfuckers are only traveling 800 kilometers. But the thing that I'm seeing here is this guy just, he won't stop until we blow his ass off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's where I am on that is this guy just, and again, how long do you let them slow play it? Do you let it go until they have something that can reach our coast? Like, that's the scary part.
Well, I mean, and in all honesty, it doesn't even have to be it doesn't have to be blowing him off the face of the earth. You know, you just send in the Navy SEALs to do what they do.
I mean, true. But then again,
we can Bin Laden his ass.
This little bastard, freaking, remember, there's a little bastard in Cuba named Fidel Castro that didn't work so well with. So yeah, we may not be able to do that one. But, I mean, again, this guy isn't going to learn his lesson until we do something to him. I'm not saying that right now is the time to do something to him, but he's just going to be a little bastard until he becomes a
threat. You know what we should do to him?
What?
You know what I think we should do to him?
What's
send
that?
Him Dennis Rodman and Trump both and leave him there.
I don't know that Manny agrees with the second one there. Manny might want Trump to stick around, especially after he pretty much all but announced that he's running in 2024.
But Trump fell in love. I'm sorry, Manny. I'm not trying to make your life hard.
No,
oh, that doesn't make my life hard.
I mean, Mel, we're talking. There's really no solution to this. I'll say that again. South Korea, it did give me a little bit of happiness to hear that they're kind of saying, hey, we want to stand on our own 2 feet about this. But there's no solution here to calm.
They would
that
be the most likely ones, I would think, besides China, to be able to negotiate with Kim.
You know, here's the thing, though. Is China going to negotiate for us? Because they sure as hell didn't have our back on the Korean War.
China does not want a nuclear radiated planet. One person shoots off, everybody's going to blow off, too. That's always been what's kept us from using nuclear weapons, was the mutually assured destruction.
That's a good point. That's a good point, Manny. You think China would step in and calm them down?
I don't know that they would step in to calm them down. I think they would threaten them.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I've been sitting here this whole time thinking that they were like best friends because of the way China acted during the Korean War.
Yeah, and I don't so much see that.
70 years ago.
True.
Yeah.
Good point. Good point.
I don't see it as much as that.
And that was certainly at a time when China was not a world economic partner. If the rest of the world gets blown up and China's left, who are they going to trade with?
Yeah. Manny?
Yeah, but there's not a blowing up the rest of the world. I mean, if you blow up any part of it with a nuclear bomb, that kills the entire world.
True.
Yeah, that's what I think is the bottom line.
Yeah.
And that the mutually assured destruction, ironically, MAD has always relied upon having sane leaders in countries that have nuclear weapons.
I was about to say, I don't think that little bastard cares if he dies, and as long as he gets to see the world burn, but that's just my thoughts on him.
And that's where he's headed. I mean, let him keep launching missiles toward Japan. And Japan is going to mount an offensive against him.
True, because Japan ain't fucking around. I mean, I'm just saying.
Japan didn't have any sense of humor about this.
Yeah, no, not at all. Japan don't give two shits. We learned that in World War II. I'm not even going to try to downplay that by any stretch. Okay, guys, last topic before we head on to our American Idiot of the Week. A Texas doctor is being sued for defying Texas's new six-week abortion ban. This story from NBC News.
A Texas doctor is defying the state's new ban on abortions after 6 weeks. Dr. Alan Braid said that he recognizes there could be consequences, but he believes he has a, quote, duty of care to his patient. NBC News digital reporter Chloe Atkins joins us now. Chloe, tell us about this doctor and why he decided to come forward at this point.
Hey, Aaron. So Alan Braid provides abortion care in San Antonio, Texas, and he's been practicing for about 40 years now. And he revealed Saturday, like you mentioned, in a Washington Post op-ed that he violated the state's new restrictive abortion ban, which prohibits abortions when cardiac activity is detected. So that's typically around 6 weeks in pregnancy. Braid said that he performed an abortion on September 6th for a woman who, although was in her first trimester, was beyond the state's limit. And he said that he had a duty of care to this patient and that she also had a fundamental right to an abortion. And Aaron, he said that he understands that there could be legal consequences, but he didn't want the state to get away with the new law not being tested in court.
So, Chloe, let's talk about those consequences then. Have we heard anything from the state, anything from anti-abortion rights groups on this?
Right. So I spoke to an anti-abortion group over the weekend, Texas Right to Life, and they told me that they are monitoring the situation and they are also dedicated to making sure that this new law is upheld and enforced in the state of Texas. I do want to highlight that now any private citizen can sue him underneath this new law. And if he does get sued, the Center for Reproductive Rights group, which is a pro-abortion group, said that they would defend him in court. But as of right now, we don't know if and when someone will sue him.
All right, Chloe Atkins, NBCNews.com reporter. Chloe, thank you.
Thank you.
Obviously, that story a little bit behind. I think it was yesterday that story came out, and then today the state of Texas suing this doctor. Obviously, I want to start this off by saying, of course, I understand that I'm not a woman, you know, I shouldn't speak on such things, so on and so forth. Here's my thoughts on this. I think Texas is being way too restrictive on this by a lot of stretch of the imagination. I think that there is certainly cause, rape, incest, the huge, that these people should definitely, you know, have this as an option. I truly believe that there's not a bad person out there that's just like, fuck it, I want to go get an abortion today. I think this, but not in large numbers.
It's whether or not women can be trusted to be the masters of their own bodies. Right now, The state really wants a foothold on that in Texas. Of course, this is not odd. They have for a while. But right. The problem I have with the arguments about, but not even for rape or incest, that in itself says that the only way a woman can have autonomy over her own body is after it's been violated in the first place.
It's an interesting.
So that in itself is a little, I happened to see it on Twitter today and I said, that just makes sense.
I mean, you bring up a good point. That's a very good point. Once again, you would think that as adults, and once again, I'm saying this 100%, Manny, and anybody out there that's a conservative, I truly believe that there is not an abundance of females out there that are getting pregnant that are just saying, you know what, fuck it, I want to get an abortion today. I don't think that exists. I think there may be one or two mentally deranged people that may do that, sure. But to say that it needs a law to regulate it?
Regulations for safety, I understand, but regulations on telling a woman what she can and cannot do with her own body is enough. Now, I don't want to get into the long weeds about the abortion issue itself. The feminist take from the 1970s was simple. If men could get pregnant, abortion would be a sacrament.
Manny, I'll let you go ahead and respond to all of this that we said before we get into actual meat and taters of the Texas doctor in this individual case.
Boy. Thank you.
Here comes the conservative.
My issue with the whole fucking thing
oh,
is
damn.
That when you say my body, my choice. What about the child's body and the child's choice? Nobody seems to care about that. I'm speaking right now. Hold on, please. When it comes to everybody getting what they want, nobody thinks about these people that are put to death. So when are we going to start looking at their rights?
It's when we had determined that that was when the fetus was viable, which I still have a problem with, because if you put a person, quote unquote, ahead of another person that already has a mind, a history, a family, people that actually know them, interact with them, and need them over a cluster of cells, I'm not all about that personhood stuff until a child is born.
But that's the minority of the people that are being given abortions.
I'm sorry now?
I said that's the minority of the people that are getting abortions.
The minority of people getting abortions.
The ones who are actually in danger of dying because this fetus is growing inside of them.
Do you have statistics on that? I'm not trying to be smart.
Do you want a child born into poverty? Do you want a child?
I would rather have that than a bunch of dead babies.
Well, we don't give a darn whatsoever about them once they're here. All of a sudden, all of this pro-life stuff is, you're on your own.
I mean, that's a fair argument too. That we don't take care of, you know, the children that are currently present in this world. I would agree with that. That is a very valid point. Manny, I do see your point. I do want to see those statistics, though. If you do have those, definitely get them.
Yeah, I don't have them.
Well, no, if you have a statistic showing me that, you know, the minority.
Not every abortion that's sought is going to be because it endangers the mother's life.
Right. I think.
But you might be putting her into a situation where once the kid's here, both of them are endangered because she's not able to support the kid.
Good point, too.
And we have adoption for reasons like that.
Here's the thing, though, Manny. I will say this, though. You know as well as I do, at least here in the state of Arkansas, the DHS and a lot of that shit's kind of fucked up. There's a lot of, let's just talk about the workers alone, are working 12 to 18 hours a day, and people are getting overlooked constantly that are currently.
You're right. I'm sorry. You're right. Killing people is much better.
That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying.
Monty Python has got a section in their movie, I think it's The Meaning of Life, that is a big Broadway production of Every Sperm is Sacred. I mean, how far back do you go before?
I don't know. I'm not sure why we're bringing up movies and sections of film, Broadway plays.
Is every sperm a man has, does it need to complete its trip towards humanhood?
No, the body wasn't designed that way.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and move on to the actual meat and taters of this subject. The Texas doctor being sued. I think this is a situation where, again, we're kicking the ball down the field and we're heading towards the Supreme Court. Just like that Mississippi story I sent you earlier, Manny, I think we're heading towards retrying Roe versus Wade with a conservative Supreme Court. I don't think it's going to be overturned, though. I don't think the conservatives are going to get what they want in this case, even with, because we've seen a majority of the justices that even Trump's appointees, Kavanaugh, for example, has gone against the conservative notion a lot of times. I don't see this being a victory for the people that are wanting more regulation upon what we already have with the heartbeat law and everything else. I don't see more regulation, number one, being needed, but number two, you know, occurring once it gets to the Supreme Court level. Manny, we'll start with you.
I agree. I mean, I think it needs to be tested, you know, figure out what is it that we want to be the law, bottom line.
And, you know, I think that's the biggest argument with this abortion situation, besides the fact that, you know, there is an argument to be made that you shouldn't tell somebody else how to live their life. I can completely agree with you on that end, Mel. But I also look on the other end of, when does life technically start? Does life begin at the birth, or does life begin when the heart starts beating? I would say that if you're legally dead is when your heart stops beating, so vice versa. But, you know, I'm no...
You got to have a developed heart for it to beat.
Right. And, I mean, I believe that's what it is at 6 weeks, correct?
Nope. No.
No, then what are they picking up? Isn't that the isn't 6 weeks
the beginnings of electrical impulses as the brain is starting to pull itself together?
Okay, then we'll work forwards to, okay, they have a fully functioning heart. How close is that to actual birth?
I don't know, but I know it's not in the first 6 weeks. It's several months down the line.
Okay. But that's my thing. Like, if you are far enough along that you have almost a full-term baby, no, you absolutely, in my opinion, should not be getting an abortion. You should have thought about that 4 to 5 months ago. That's my thought. Once again, not trying to tell women how to be, yada, yada, yada.
The morning after pill lasts or is effective up to how long?
I don't know, actually. I've never really researched the morning after.
I think it's a pretty short time period. It's emergency contraception, and there is definitely a short window. I don't know it off the top of my head.
5 to 7 days, something like that.
I thought it was 24 to 48. I thought it was 24 to 48 hours.
Oh, really?
Yeah, honestly, and correct me if I'm wrong in the comments section, y'all, but I legitimately thought it was 24 to 48 hours. I feel like I know where you're going with that, Manny, but the reason why I say I would hesitate even that close to conception, you being able to make up your mind, there's large stories about people who are going in and finding out they're pregnant at least a month after the conception. So they may not know that they were pregnant. That's why I'm saying, you know, hey, the heartbeat, okay, cool. We have a fully functioning heart. But that close, come on now. They may not even know they're pregnant. Mel, do you think like myself that we're heading towards the Supreme Court and we're just, again, another situation where we're...
Well, of course we're headed to the Supreme Court. I just saw earlier as I was glancing through Twitter that it's not just one lawsuit. The doctor's being sued, I think, by 6 people so far. Which means Texas didn't bother to write into their law any kind of limit on how many, you know, citizen vigilantes can go ahead and prosecute a doctor.
Why the hell is anybody suing him besides the state of Texas? Because only the state of Texas has a lawsuit here because they violated a law.
No, part of that law says anybody in Texas that knows of anybody assisting a woman to get an abortion can be sued by that individual and collect starting at $10,000.
Wow.
However you feel about the subject of abortion, that's ridiculous on its face.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Because
that opens the door to thousands of people suing doctors or Uber drivers or somebody they're mad at.
Absolutely. I mean, Lord knows we already have an overabundance of lawsuits in this country over frivolous reasons.
Right.
We just need to load the courtroom up with more, apparently.
Way to go, Texas.
Right? Gotta love Texas. Okay, y'all.
This is actually the Texas GOP, to be clear.
This is the cruise missile crowd. Okay, y'all, here we go. American Idiot of the Week, I'll start out. My American Idiot of the Week is going to be the President of the United States. The reason why he is, I think he has broadly overreached. Mel, we've already talked about this. He has broadly overreached with this new IRS code that he announced. I believe the Republicans are right. I do believe the Republicans are going to defeat it. $600. I mean, again, you could set that at anywhere, but you're talking about setting it at what most Americans' paychecks are, and you're going to start watching every transaction they have because they had a $600 deposit. That's absolutely unacceptable and a broad and complete over and misuse of government resources.
You know something, Mike? That was never going to go. That was never going to work.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be too many Democrats that say that's nuts.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be kind of bipartisan in him getting that.
Just because the president puts the platform doesn't mean it's going to make it to law.
Yeah, I think he's nuts for even putting it out there, but you know,
I'm sorry, guys. I've got really bad technology.
Oh, you're fine. We're hearing you loud and clear. Manny, who is your American Idiot of the Week? Is it going to be Mr. Joseph R. Biden again?
That started to. I was really thinking about it. But no, I'm going to go with a backup that I had. And the only reason I'm calling this individual an Idiot of the Week is because I really don't know the entire story. I went looking for the entire story, and I can't find anything anywhere other than a bunch of puff pieces about what happened, but I cannot find the actual footage.
Okay.
So if anybody out there want to provide it for me, I'll retract this. But until I get it, this favored chick that is all up in arms because the people covering her wall climbing focused in on her butt.
Oh,
oh my God. Who cares? You're climbing a wall in a race. I'm sorry if the close-up accidentally captured your butt. They are at a lower vantage point than you are. You're climbing a wall.
Here's the thing. If it's gratuitous, yes, absolutely unacceptable for somebody to just gratuitously shoot your ass. But if it's just like, hey, I happen to catch your ass, oh, let me go up here.
And that's why I'm saying I haven't got to everything that I looked up to try to see how this was done. There is no footage out there of the actual race. The actual as it was happening.
Okay.
So I don't know if it was one of those legitimate. They focused in and sit there and talked about her buttocks for a while. Or if it happened to be as they were zooming in, they realized, oh, crap, we need to move the camera.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mel, who's going to be the American Idiot of the Week from the occupier?
Oh, U.S. Intel. Military Intel. Easily.
That is a damn good one.
And as an official note, I am a member of Occupy, but in no way without meeting with anybody else do I speak for anybody but Mel.
Okay, that's
just
absolutely
one of our little credos.
Apologies.
And I'll let you know when you're going to start hearing some Occupy-flavored commentary.
Okay. Absolutely.
But I'm saying it's just, you know, kind of for me, cut and dried. We shouldn't be shooting drones when we don't know what we're shooting at.
Absolutely agreed. Okay, y'all, that's pretty much everything we got for this week. We will see you guys next week with more American Idiots. Until then, y'all have a safe week. Good night, everybody.
Are we still able to talk to each other?